Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week, Lama Tom Broadwater continues his teaching from the book The Way of the Bodhisattva by Shantideva, Chapter 6, Diligence. What is diligence, and how can it be applied to overcome obstacles to practicing virtue such as laziness and distraction? We discuss how to use aspiration, steadfastness, courage, and other tools to support diligence in our daily practice. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
First thing I want you to do is just relax. Just relax. Probably as a result of what you hear today, you're not going to reach Buddhahood. I'm sorry. So just relax. And because I'm probably not going to teach you anything that's going to lead to your Buddhahood, I'm going to relax. So just relax for a few minutes. Is this anybody's first time here? Welcome. Glad you could come. How did you find out about? Okay. Okay, very good. So welcome. So the first thing we do is establish why we're here in the first place. And we're here, hopefully, to wake up. And in that process, what we hope in waking up that will be helpful to other beings. This is called a bodhisattva motivation. And the mind that aspires to wake up and to be a benefit to others is called bodhicitta. Citta meaning mind or heart, and Buddha meaning awakened, to be awakened. So an awakened heart. So we establish that motivation, and we do that through taking refuge to the Buddha. If you don't know the words, they're in Tibetan, it's okay. Just establish that today you would like to wake up a little bit and as a result to be more helpful to other beings. Sanjay Chidang Saki Choknam La Janchu Badu Dagni Kapsuchi Dagi Jinso Chi Pei Sonam Ki Dro La Pinchir Sanjay Duparsho Sanjay Chidang Saki Chodnam La Janchu Badu Dadni Kyapsu Chi Dagi Jinso Chi Pei Sonam Ki Dro La Pinchir Sanjay Drupasho Sanjay Chidang Saki Chodnam La Janchu Badu Dadni Kyatsu Chi Dagi Jinso Chi Pei Sonam Ki Dro La Pinchir Sanjay Drupasho. So again, good morning to everybody. My name is Tom Broadwater. I get to come here. It's a privilege and a pleasure to come here about once a month. To teach. I'm very grateful to the board and Lama Kathy for allowing me to come. Hi, Lama Kathy. Good. How are you doing? You doing okay?
A little better, but I'm protecting against future infection.
Hope you get over that real soon. I appreciate the opportunity to come here and speak and talk. Hopefully something that I say will be helpful to you. And if not, that's okay too. But I hope I can say something that will be of some benefit to you. Today we're going to talk about diligence. And the reason we're going to talk about diligence is for the last year, yes, for the last year, I've been teaching from this book called The Way of the Bodhisattva, a wonderful book. And it's such a book that you pick it up and you read it one time and you look at it one way, then you put it down, you take it up again, you read it again. And it has such great meaning. It can be a textbook for the rest of your life, really. It's basically about how do I live a life that is wakes me up and helps me with other people. Basically, the idea here that Shantideva is talking about are the virtues that lead us to wake up. The virtues that if we practice will be of benefit to other beings. So the particular virtue that I'm going to talk about today is diligence. Diligence is important if we're going to accomplish anything in life. Diligence can be seen from different facets. It's like a jewel. You look at it one way and you see it this way. You look at it another way, you see it another way. So there's all kinds of ways to look at it. When I was in retreat, and this was almost, it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago last month. I went into retreat for 3 years. And at the beginning of that retreat, Kempo Rinpoche said some words to us that I will never forget. I'm not going to quote them exactly, but the idea will remain with me forever. And he said, you know, in this retreat that you're going on, I don't know how much you're going to accomplish. Some of us a lot and some of us not very much. But he said, no matter how much you accomplish, it will be based on one thing, courage. How much courage do you have? And that's a part of diligence, courage. I'm reading a book, I'm sort of not following what I was going to say, but that's okay. I'm reading a book about Alexander Hamilton, who was an enormously diligent individual. Disciplined individual. And that's another aspect. We're talking about discipline, diligence, they're all sort of all together. And for him, it was that when he went into battle, he was very single point. He was right on. So this is a part of what we have to do if we want to wake up. We have to be single pointed in our practice. So that's one aspect. Courage is another aspect. So I've tried to teach this in a lot of different ways, but today I'm going to take passages from the chapter on diligence, and I'm going to read them to you and then make some comments about them. At different times in the past, I've tried to read the whole thing, and I've noticed at the end people with glassy eyes and going to sleep, so I won't try to read the entire chapter today. I'll just try to take different aspects of the chapter and read it to you. So, Shantideva says, diligence means joy in virtuous ways. Its contraries have been defined as laziness, an inclination to unwholesomeness, defeatism, and self-contempt. So it's taking joy in virtue, and its contrary is defeatism, self-contempt, and unwholesomeness. In the modern day, we might translate unwholesomeness to mean being distracted. Diligence is the opposite of being distracted. Does that make sense? So like Alexander Hamilton wasn't thinking when he went into battle about his wife, Elisa, I think her name was? Yeah. He was concentrated on this. When we practice virtue, our minds are directly on that, the practice. We're not distracted in all the ways that we can be distracted. We'll talk about defeatism and self-contempt in just a minute. They're juicy, too. So he says that, going on with that, the next stanza, he says, a taste for idle pleasure and a craving for repose and sleep, no qualms about the sorrows of samsara, laziness indeed is born from these. So I don't think you're any different from me. I get distracted a great deal. And that's, you know, in entertainments of all kinds. And there's nothing I will not be entertained by and get away from the actual practice. Another place he says, I have not done, and this I'm only starting, and this I'm only halfway through. Then is the sudden coming of the Lord of Death, and oh, the thought, alas, I'm finished. What he's saying there is that this thought, the realization that we get into all these projects, we get into all these diversions, we get into all these thoughts, and we fail to recognize the fact that all these projects, all these diversions, all these things that we get into are going to end. And as a result of that, we fail to practice diligence. We fail to practice Dharma. We fail to practice virtue. We fail to waken up. And then, because we've not practiced, we're going to be regretful. He's also talking about what should inspire us to practice. And he's saying the fact that life is very short is a reason to want to practice. Because in the end, when you come to the point of death, and this is what it gets sort of, we don't like to think about these thoughts, but the fact is we should. When we come to the point of death, we're going to have to give all this stuff up anyway. We're going to have to give up our friends. We're going to have to give up our internet connections. We're going to have to give up all that stuff. So the point is, if that's true, that all this has to be given up, what are our priorities? What should be our priorities? And we have to sometimes think that starkly. Point of death, all these things are going to be given up. So what is my priority today? Then he goes on and he says, do not be downcast, but marshal all your powers. Make an effort to be the master of yourself. Practice the equality of self and others. Practice the exchange of self and other. So he's saying we can get very discouraged when we are practicing virtue. Let me tell you this. Sometimes when I sit down to practice and I'm on the cushion, what comes up are not nice thoughts. A lot of times I embarrass myself with what I'm thinking. I'm mean, I'm nasty, I hold thoughts of revenge and anger. I sort of embarrass myself. All of a sudden, oh God, I've been thinking of this all this time. And what Shanti Deva is saying is, don't be downcast. Have courage. What takes more courage than to face my faults? Dharma practice and meditation is not about thinking nice la-la thoughts. It's about facing some of the ugliness of our lives fearlessly. That's a part of diligence. Because what happens oftentimes when those thoughts come up is we want to run away from them, right? I don't want to think this. It's not what I think of myself. I don't want to think that way about myself. But a part of diligence is actually observing that and not becoming downcast about it. And instead, he says, and this is where the courage and the diligence comes in. It's at that point I marshal all my powers and make an effort. How often have you been in meditation where you've had all these mean thoughts come up and you say, boy, I never want to do this again. But it's precisely because they are coming up and you are recognizing them that you ought to continue. Again, I'll go into the practice of equality of self and other and the practice of exchange of self and other in just a moment. Sometimes we don't want to practice virtue or we don't want to practice on our cushion because it's really hard. It's really hard because all these things come up, right? Yet I want to ask you, each one of you, and I ask myself, how much effort have I made for mundane worldly things all the time? I mean, we're slaving out there doing the job we have to do every day. We do that. So, yes, Dharma practice is sometimes difficult, but look at all the other things you slave your life. I look at my children right now. They're working two jobs and they're, you know, they've got kids to take care of and they got all kinds of things they have to do. So in a mundane sense, there's a lot that we have to do. What does the Buddha want us to do? He wants us, first of all, to meditate. To be on the cushion. That's tough medicine, I agree. But look at all the other things we're doing. It's tough. So he tells us, Shantideva later on, he tells us, here's how we can begin to practice diligence. He says, the forces to practice diligence are within us already. They are aspiration, steadfastness, relinquishment, and joy. And we'll describe each one of those in the beginning. Aspiration, let's start there. That helps us. That gets us on the way to being diligent. I want to wake up. Maybe today I can't wake up, but this aspiration is sort of like the pole star. It's the way it leads me on. For many, many years, I smoked, and I can't tell you how many days I would wake up and say, today I'm not going to smoke. That was my aspiration. Of course, I did smoke. But it's that aspiration that I kept in my mind all those years that eventually led to my not smoking. I aspire to be kind, loving, and helpful to other beings. Maybe today I fail in some way or another. But I have this aspiration, and that allows me to keep persevering, and persevering is another aspect to diligence. He said, you know, on this road to Buddhahood, on this road to being a bodhisattva, we have to be steadfast. And here's what he says about that. He says, let me first consider my reserves, to start or not to start accordingly. It might be better not to start. But once begun, I should not then withdraw. For if I do such things, the pattern will return in later lives, and sin and pain will grow, and other actions will be left undone, or else will bear a meager fruit. So what he's saying there, you want to wake up. You might have to consider your resources. And maybe right now they're a little lacking, and you're a little lacking in courage as a result. So he said, for some, it might be just as well not to even try, because if you fail, that repeats a pattern over and over again. But once you have made that commitment, once you have taken refuge, you can't give up. You're not going to give up. Action, the afflictions, and ability. Three things to which my pride should be directed. I will do this. I myself alone. These words define my pride of action. What he's saying there is very simply this. You have within your power the power to resolve. You can resolve to act virtuously. This is something you have within you. So you say, I will accomplish this task. I won't give up, despite the fact when I recognize the fact that meanness, anger, and all these things arise, I'm not going to succumb to self-pity or doubt. And there's such a thing while we're on this path called courageous self-confidence. It is the statement that you say to yourself, I can do this. I can do this. And that's different than the pride that says, I can do this better than you. That's not the kind of pride you want. But each of us have the capacity to resolve and to do better and to keep on the path. He also says, I alone will do this. What he's saying there is that you can't blame somebody else when it's not going right for you, when your practice isn't going right. We often try to find people to blame. By the same token, no one can, even the Buddha by himself, lead you to Buddhahood. Only you can do that. Now, having said that, it's also right to say there we are interconnected, and our teachers and the Dharma and other people within the Sangha can be of help to us. But it's me that's got to use that help. So I alone, I will do this, and I alone will do it. So you have to have a certain amount of self-confidence in this path to Buddhahood. But if depressed, I give up trying, how can I gain freedom from my abject state? But if I stand my ground with proud resolve, it will be hard for even great faults to attack. Don't get confused about arrogance and self-confidence. They are two different things. And you are entitled to be self-confident. We're not entitled to say, I'm better than you, because that's a pride that gets us nowhere. It's self-clinging. It's arrogance. When I am beleaguered by defilements, I will stand and face them in a thousand ways. When I am beleaguered by my own defilements, I might add, I will stand and face them in a thousand ways. I'll not surrender to the host of the afflictions, but like a lion, I will stand amid a crowd of foxes. That's pretty strong language. So when we come up against all these things that are our afflictions, whether it's anger, hatred, jealousy, whatever it is, an accomplished practitioner will use that as the path to get beyond them. In other words, when my anger comes up, I look at it. What were the causes and conditions of it? Who is it that's angry? Who is it that I am angry at? And look at it, analyze it, observe it, and with wisdom, dissolve it. That's the best way. For the rest of us, we have to take remedies. We have to take antidotes, such as, if I'm angry, look at being patient and practice that. And even if we're not patient, we fake it to make it, right? So we use the antidotes. And finally, when we're first on the path, and sometimes just when something really gets really wound up in us, we just have to sort of back away from it. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. So we have three ways of dealing with when these things arise in our mind. So that's how we deal with being discouraged. He also says that we ought to use the force, the power of joy. Sometimes when we're doing practice, it seems anything else besides joyful, right? Drudgery. Oh, my God. But he says, like those who take great pleasure in their games, whatever task the bodhisattva does, let them devote themselves without reserve, with joyfulness that never knows satiety. Satiety. It's never satisfied. So he's saying, sometimes when we're doing practice and we're getting all bogged down, pretend it's child's play. Just enjoy it. Don't think about the greater goal you're trying to get at. Just enjoy the step you're in right now. I'll talk about that in a minute, about someone I know that does that. He said, when we're practicing, whether it's off the cushion or on the cushion, he said, we should act like the elephant tormented by the noonday sun will dive into the waters of a lake. And likewise, I must plunge into my work that I might bring it to completion. So, you know, I don't know how elephants feel, but I presume that when they're in the noonday sun, it's pretty awful. And so they plunge into their practice. And as a result, they take joy in it. Have you ever been just so angry, uptight, or jealous, whatever the emotion is, and somehow through some sort of grace, you actually then sit down and practice meditation, and all of a sudden you say, oh, like the elephant that plunges into the water. It's that moment from feeling that affliction to actually doing the practice that takes the courage. That's hard sometimes. I would rather just be in this feeling of anger or resentment or whatever. But the moment I take the plunge, oh my gosh, how much better it was. And in those moments, I can take joy in my practice. And that's what Shawnee Davis is telling us to do. He gives us another piece of advice, and I think it's really important. He said, if impaired by weakness or fatigue, I'll lay the work aside the better to resume. And I will leave the task when it's complete, all avid for the work that's next to come. So he's saying sometimes we're doing our practice and it's just not working out for us right then. We're just tired, we're exhausted. And he's saying, take a break. It's okay. There's wisdom sometimes when we're exhausted, because this is not something we're going to do in one day, to just relax. I will tell you a little secret. You're not to say this outside this room. In practice, when I was in retreat, there were tunes, which are periods of time when we practice. I slept. Don't tell anybody that. Don't not tell Rinpoche I did that. But I did. But there was a wisdom, I think, in my doing that. Because, first of all the guys that were in retreat were half my age, and they could do more than I could. The other thing is, I knew that if I didn't, I would resent my practice. So there's a wisdom of that. But it's balanced by saying, am I indulging myself? And sometimes you have to look at that too. So it's not too tight, not too loose. You know what I'm saying? And then he said, then once you resume your practice, don't sit on your laurels either. Don't just say, oh, I've done such a great job. That's a part of being diligent. Occasionally, when you need to, you take a break. So I want to talk very briefly here about someone in my life that I think is very courageous and very diligent. And she's my wife. About 4 weeks ago, she had an accident and wound up in the hospital. And had both legs were broken. She got a broken hip and she has a broken neck, and she's in a hospital right now. She's in a nursing home right now. And that could be, to say the least, that could be a little discouraging, right? You and I would be pretty discouraged about that. Someone told you you had two broken legs, a fractured hip and a broken neck. That's a little discouraging. So my wife comes out of ICU and is put into a regular room. And Marie calls her. And Marie says, I need to see you, Connie. Can I come over? Now, I'm hearing this. She has it over, you know, on her iPhone. It's over loudspeaker. I'm gesticulating wildly saying, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. And what Connie did, she said, come on over. I thought, here she is with all these problems. She's not feeling well. She's just getting off these heavy drugs. And she asks Marie over. So I said, Connie, why did you do that? And she told me, she said, well, right before my accident, I went to Marie's husband's funeral. And I know she's suffering. And I want to be helpful to her. I couldn't do that. And what was she practicing? She was saying, Maria is no different than me. She's no different from me. She's suffering just like me. And she went the next step. She said, Maria, come on over. I'll take on your suffering. They had a conversation. Maria cried and was upset. But at the end of the conversation, Maria said, thank you, Connie. I feel much better. And she left. That's courage. That's continuing to go on. And she did it in a very skillful way. This meeting with Maria was not only helpful to Maria, it was helpful to her, because subsequent to that conversation, Connie felt better. So there's a practicality to seeing other people suffering just like you. There's a practicality to actually taking other people's suffering on, even when you are suffering. And in fact, that's sometimes the best time to do it. When you're suffering, when you're angry, when you're jealous, when you're whatever problem you have, look at all the people just like you that are suffering and you take it on. And by your working through it, you hope to reach Buddhahood, and you hope that in taking it on, that other, those all beings will be free from their suffering. I don't live with a saint, by the way, but she's pretty good. She's doing a lot better than I am. The other thing I've learned from Connie is that when we have this goal, of Buddhahood. She has the goal of walking again. She may never walk again. And you and I, in this lifetime, might not reach Buddhahood. Connie has to take little small steps. Just to put a bedpan under her butt, she had to learn to move over like this. Small step. Very small step. But you know, when she was able to raise her butt and they put a bedpan underneath of her, I went out and got a bottle of sparkling grape juice. I got a big French baguette and a big piece of cheese, and we celebrated. Take joy in the small steps that you make on this path. Okay, so I missed 10 days of practice. I wasn't, but today I did. Rejoice. Find joy in what you do. The little steps you make in progress. That's important, because you could say, and I mean, it's just as easy to say, this is such a small step. This is, you know, to what I did or what I could do. But practice and taking small steps is about having no expectation of what the step next step may be, or fear that you won't make it. Both she and I know she may never walk again. But we're not fearful, because there is so much we can do. We may or may not reach Buddhahood in this lifetime. But there is so much we can do in this lifetime if we don't waste it. If we don't waste it, there's so much we can do. And we can take joy in what we do. So, what I want to leave with you is just one thing. take courage. No matter where you are currently in your practice, recognize that's where you should be. And you should be there because of basically the law of karma. This is where you brought yourself. This is where you are. No need to be downcast. You can make steps in the right direction. And the fact that when you sit on the cushion and all these thoughts about how unkind you've been or how whatever, jealous, do one thing for yourself. Cradle yourself in loving kindness and compassion. Don't beat yourself up. The Shambhala people talk about making friends with yourself. So all you're doing is, when these things come up, is you're recognizing who you are. And you say, this is where I'm at. And cradle yourself in love and compassion. And that, my dear brothers and sisters, takes courage. So what I wish for all of you is that when you get discouraged in the coming days, don't get downcast. Have courage. Because the Buddha tells us that power is really in us. It really is there. And have the courage to bring it up. Anybody have any thoughts or questions?
Thank you. It's so good to see you again.
Good to see you, Eric.
One of the things that occurred to me when you gave your talk this morning, sometimes I don't like reading Shantideva. He's very monastic, very much
right.
Into the rules and regs and the Vinaya.
Right.
I'm just not. But what I got today, you really helped me. I understood that all this renunciation was, he's just inviting us to renounce stuff that's not going to help anyway, stuff we can't take with us.
You're right.
And ultimately, I work very hard to get a bunch of stuff thinking it'll make me happy, and it's never the key to happiness. So then I, in my ignorance, try to get more.
Sure.
And you helped me, I just want to say you helped me stop for a minute this morning and see it differently. And you pointed out what is the potential key to happiness, and it's simply taking refuge in that which cares for me. Taking refuge in that which cares for me, which is Buddha nature.
Oh, yeah.
And the Dharma and all of you, Sangha.
Yeah.
And I love the example of how Connie took care of her friend and also how you take care of Connie. It's inspiring, and I just wanted to say that. So thank you.
Yeah. Now, Eric, here's the deal. For a moment, you had this sense of renunciation, right?
Yeah.
Don't get discouraged when it comes back up again that you start wanting to get stuff. Because this is sort of like our habit. So we have to keep working on it in tiny little steps. We may get some moment where we say, oh, my God, yes, I can. But then we go back to it because that's our habit. But don't get downcast or discouraged. It's a process, isn't it?
For me, I'll just out myself. There's a point at which I like collecting nice wine. Yeah, and I might not drink it. I mean, I've got bottles of them sitting there for 6 years. But it's like when I feel a little bit anxious, maybe I'd go find that. Now I don't do that so much anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll go online and I'll collect a Dharma talk and download it.
Yeah.
And I may never listen to it. I've got a hard drive full of stuff that I'm not learning from right now. And a lot of nice pictures, too.
Yes. So I say something? And I don't leave. But one of the things that happens whenever we start to practice Dharma and things that are uncomfortable to us, whether it's off the cushion or on the cushion, is we revert to other refuges.
Yeah. Right.
To other things, whether it's sex, rock and roll, pleasure, you name it, whatever, wine, you know. Mm-hmm. And all those things are not bad. It's not, but it's the fact that we take refuge in them in the sense that we want to hold on to them and grasp them. Indulging in the wine, I don't see it. For monastic and for those that have taken the vows, of course, you shouldn't. But otherwise, it's not a bad thing.
Right, right. Yeah, I wasn't thinking it was bad. I was just thinking, it's fine. But it may be even neutral. But it's not going to get me where I want to go.
Absolutely, right.
And that was the thing. So you're combining aspiration and taking refuge in something that might get me, using a vehicle that might get me where I want to get to.
Right.
That's just helpful to me. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, baby steps. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just baby steps, right?
Absolutely. But there's all kinds of things we can take refuge in. We can take refuge in, like I said, things of pleasure. Different kinds of things that come up, putting our time in on the internet, anything to divert our attention from whatever might be truly bothering us or disturbing us. We can take refuge in an identity, you know, an identity that I'm Buddhist, you know. I'm so special. I don't think my wife identifies as a Buddhist, but she did Tonglin. So, you know. Anybody else?
Thanks, Tom. I really enjoyed your talk.
Speak
today.
Into the microphone.
Oh, okay, sorry. Can you? Yes. I was interested in one of the things you said about, you know, try to meditate, actually conscious of, you know, how I'm conscious of, you know, some of my foulness, I suppose. Like I spent much of my life basically believing that I'm a really nice guy and other people are mean, you know. And it's kind of childish, and it really is such a position.
So what comes up in your mind, how mean other people are?
Oh, yeah. I'm a great guy, you know. Yeah. The problems are, you know, are other people. They're the ones who are, you know.
I know this one well.
Yeah. But, I mean, so it hasn't really served me well, but I've, you know, basically.
Of course not. But so it causes you pain.
Yeah, well, yeah, it requires a certain lack of self-awareness, too.
I mean, that's mindfulness, important. Absolutely. Yes,
but,
I understand
since I've been
that.
In the room, I've started doing practice, you know, not as diligent as I should be. But at any rate, I notice a lot of times when I do, start meditating, I'm conscious of, you know, there seems like there's another person that tries to take over. And so it says, this is a bunch of junk, you know, you should just, you know, you don't want to do any of this. Or I want to be like proud and holding, you know, pretty much. And also, or even if it's not that, or else I'll be conscious of depression, of really bad feelings that I try to push down. And those things seem to come up
When
I'm meditating. And I think a lot of what I believe is that from childhood, I've tried to develop like a false self-image that I want to present to the world. And a lot of ways of enlightenment and waking up to me is basically being, you know, becoming real, becoming a real person.
Becoming real, that's what you think enlightenment is.
I believe, I mean, my perception. Because,
yeah. So let me sort of break down some of the things you were saying there. When you said you think there's like this some other person here that's sort of driving some of your thoughts, what I would say to that is that's just a thought.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah. But
So what do we do? What's the discipline? How do we diligently apply ourselves in that situation? Thoughts arise, what do we do?
Well, whatever, usually what I do is like whatever emotion, I realize that this emotion is just false emotion. And I just recognize it as just being sort of a storm. You know, just sort of my own personal storm
that
dissipates eventually.
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't last.
Yeah. And the idea, too, is don't give it energy by ruminating on it. Allow yourself to drop the thought. That's the discipline in meditation. Mindfulness, first of all, the mindfulness is I'm thinking this thought. And the discipline part is, I don't give energy to it. I don't suppress it, but I don't give energy to it. I drop it. And that's the discipline. That's the diligence that we apply in meditation.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that seems pretty obvious.
Of course, doesn't it?
But it's, at the time, it...
I know it sounds obvious, and you're going to say, but I don't do it.
Yeah.
And again, let's look at that from the standpoint of we're not mindful. So it's again working on this idea that I'm going to observe this thought and I'm going to let it go. And it's being very mindful initially of a process. Does that make sense?
And a lot of times, speaking of joy, but a lot of times, I think humor is sort of the self-deprecation or deprecation. It's basically making fun of the false images that we try to create.
I think that's great.
I mean, a lot of times I'll pretend that I'm angry about something I'm really not.
Yeah.
And I'll get people laughing because, you know, obviously, you know.
I agree with you. Being able to look at your anger and laugh is really, sometimes that only comes after the point. You can laugh about it. I don't put stuff together very well. And I remember this from way like 20 years ago. I was putting together a outdoor play set for my kids. And I couldn't put it together and I got really angry. And my wife and my kids observed me from the window taking this thing and swinging it across and then taking it and going to the other side of the yard and swinging it the other way. And then and they said, that was the funniest thing to observe. Here. And I did put it together, but the thing was so mangled. It was a reminder for the rest of my children's childhood that I did this thing. The sliding board, they never could slide down. But I agree with you that being able to take some of this light is good. The only problem with that is, in the moment, it's not always something. It's something we have to practice, you know. And maybe only afterwards. But if we can do it in the moment, in the heat of the moment, you know, I don't get mad at people so often. I just get mad at objects, and I slam doors on my car. And I do notice that when I'm doing that, I say, oh, my God, am I doing this? Isn't this silly? And so, yeah, humor is important. Thank you. Anybody have anything else they'd like to bring up?
How do you prove you're doing any of this right?
How do you prove if you're doing any of this right?
Yeah.
Define this.
Bodhisattva, loving kindness, proper meditation, proper thought, speech?
Okay. Good question. How do I know? First of all, and probably, first of all, listen to teachers. What you're really asking is, what do I adopt? What do I take on as practice? And what behaviors do I get rid of, right?
Yes.
Is that, would that be right?
That and what type of feedback you would get afterwards or during that would let you know.
What kind of feedback you
what
get?
What type of feedback you would have during the action or afterwards that would let you know that it was actually the proper.
Okay. Well, I don't have a total answer for that, but I can begin and probably help you a little bit. One of the things I would say is be interested in the Dharma. Be interested in the teachings. Get around people that are also interested in the Dharma. Places like this is a good place to come. The other thing I say is, we do have this basically good nature, and we have to trust in that sometimes. So one of the things I say, listen to what other folks are telling you, particularly teachers, and then also listen to your own heart, because that heart basically is good.
Speaking about that, what if you're saying that people are basically good, what about creatures that and other people that are inherently evil, like, say, a demon or something, or a person that is just not a good person? What do you say to that?
What do I say about people that are not good?
Yes. How would they practice?
I think our approach is to have compassion on folks that are hurting themselves or other people. That's the approach I take. That most of what we do is done in ignorance. And so it's not so much people have some quality, something solid and real that is evil. It's really their ignorance. So it's not something solid or real, it's just their ignorance. Go ahead.
I was just wondering what should be done to help them.
How do we help people that aren't?
That are apparently bad or... That are apparently bad or malice?
Yeah. What can I do when I meet up with people that are bad? First of all, have compassion. And also recognize that maybe right this moment, there's nothing you can do. Maybe I'm not skillful enough yet to help them. And all I can have for the moment is, I wish, I have this aspiration that one day maybe I'll be skillful enough, wise enough, kind enough to be able to help that person. So it's like that. Does that help? And if it doesn't, you can say so.
No. It sounds like you're saying that if someone is beyond help, you should give up on them.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, I'm glad you say that. We don't give up on anybody. One of the things about a bodhisattva, they never give up on anybody. But they are also realistic. I may not be able to help this person right now, but may I one day be able to help? And most important of all, at least I won't do any harm to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And you said to read the Dharma. Is there any What's the? Are there any good books and or sections on this topic?
Yeah. What I would say, are you fairly new to here?
Yes.
Okay. So my suggestion would be start with some of the courses that are here every Sunday and learn about the basics through those courses. And they teach them every Sunday. So that's where I would begin. Books, and there are books that are good books. So one of the good books is No Time to Lose, but they may not be what you need for the moment. What you may need for the moment is just to hear some of the basics through some of the folks that are here. So I would invite you each Sunday to come and listen. Okay.
And another thing about people that are malicious, what if it's a person that actually where helping them be a nicer person would actually harm their happiness?
But so you're saying you're trying to help them, but you actually harm them?
No, I'm saying if they're a person that if you were to have them be nicer, they would actually be less happy.
Oh, I don't know exactly what situation that may be, but if they're harming you,
no.
That's not, is that what you're saying?
Let's say somebody had a profession that required it required people to be slighted to some extent,
And
that if you actually tried to help them be nicer or a better person, they would actually be unemployed.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that right now. So I think it's about time for us to end. I'd like to talk to you after the talk. Could we do that for a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. But thank you for your questions. They're very good. But let's talk afterwards.
Should I take a seat or?
I cannot hear you.
Sorry, do you have to do a closing ceremony or anything? Or?
We'll just dedicate the merit and then come on up and we'll talk.
All right.
Okay. So thank you very much for being here this morning. What we do is we don't take pride in anything that we've accomplished by being here. We simply offer it the merit of our activity here. For all beings, all suffering beings. So just in the quiet of your own heart, recognize that there are others in this world that are suffering and that whatever you've accomplished here, may it be ultimately for your awakening and for the benefit of all beings. And we'll just make that dedication silently in our own hearts. Thank you, and we'll see you next month, maybe.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts, at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.